spoke life comes at you fast.
Like, the fastest. Honestly, this weekend was outrageous. I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, one Antonio Brown. But
well, he was a Raider, and then he starred in what is soon to be an Academy Award-winning short film.
Yep.
And now he is a Patriot, though he is not playing in week one.
Yes.
He will be active, we assume, unless there are other shenanigans that develop or evolve week two.
Everything from now on with Antonio Brown must be said. Like any prediction, he will this, he will that. It's all with an asterisk because who the hell knows? Who the hell knows what he's going to do?
Okay.
I mean, it was an unbelievable saga this weekend with him, obviously. And, you know, on top of the fact we're leading into week one games the day before, he's, you know, out there popping around on social media, getting released.
Apparently being coached by social media experts on how to get your NFL franchise to drop you so that you can maybe be in position for a ring.
Which is, I mean, so do you buy into the conspiracy theory angle of it all? Like that he purposefully somehow had a, you know, door-to-door situation with the Patriots that if he got cut by the Raiders, he's going there, some tampering, whatever. Do you buy into any of that?
Well, it does sound crazy. However, when, as I've said on a previous podcast, when you think about Drew Rosenhaus's reach within the league and you think about the history of the Patriots maybe towing that line between cheating and ingenuity, doesn't seem completely impossible.
Sure. I mean, who knows? There's definitely the theories going on behind the scenes. That's what people
abound.
Yeah, they abound. But either way, I mean, just from a football perspective, it blows my mind that less than 2 months ago, you know, we're having the conversations of,
about Demaryius Thomas being the number two.
I mean, that was less than 2 days ago. But before, like less than 2 months ago, even before that, because like no one assumed that Demaryius Thomas would be back from an Achilles injury.
Did no one assume that?
I'm talking 2 months ago, Liz, not 2 weeks ago, where I said that he could be a big part of 11 personnel, which he was a game day inactive for week one.
You said like a top 15.
I definitely didn't say that. Definitely didn't say anything close to that. But stay on message here. Less than 2 months ago, we're talking about who the hell are the Patriots going to throw
to? Maurice Harris.
Is Maurice Harris a sleeper? Is Jakobi Meyers interesting? And
Matt
now,
Lacoste, a tight end.
Right. Now we're looking at Antonio Brown, who I still believe is one of the best separators in the NFL. He's one of the best receivers to ever do it. This last 5 to 6 year stretch that he's had is unprecedented statistically in NFL history. He's lining up opposite now of Josh Gordon on the other side of the field. Julian Edelman, you know,
the
man that is in the inner circle of Tom Brady is in the slot. And it's like, who even cares who's at tight end? Who even cares about Demaryius Thomas? Who even cares about
James White and Sony Michel and maybe Damian Harris in there, too?
It's suddenly this offense has gone from looking completely depleted to looking completely stocked. Yes. And yeah, obviously with Antonio Brown, as I said, anything can happen, right? Like he could be playing for, I mean, he was tweeting at the Canucks, you know, like before the Patriots signed him, that like, oh, sure, I'll go play hockey. Like anything is possible with Antonio Brown. But if this all works out, also, like, again, I think the marriage of these two teams, like these two guys in Tom Brady, one of the, you know, most maniacal workers in the NFL. And I could still continue. Who knows what Antonio Brown has been up to this offseason with the Raiders. But in terms of work ethic, obviously that's what he's known for, at least was known for before he went, you know, off the reservation completely. But if both of these parties are right, I think it could be something really special.
Absolutely. I also think the interesting thing about the Patriots is, you know, I used to do a show called Mostly Football with Martellus Bennett, who won a ring with Tom Brady and the Patriots. And heading into his season, a lot of people questioned whether or not he'd be able to fit in, blend, if you will, into that team. And he said that Bill didn't care as long as you did your job. And Martellus is an incredible student of the craft. He has tomes, like books and books and books, loves the chessness, the strategy of the game. And we've seen Antonio Brown also commit himself to the work of it. So I think that, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't care if you want to stunt for some videos or whatever. As long as you're getting it done on the field, then that's fine. And I just don't, I think he's going to be fine. I think that anything is possible. You're right with Antonio Brown, but all things are possible in New England.
Exactly. So, I mean, unbelievable situation leading into week one. We will hopefully see Brown week two. I know he's not even on, which is unfortunate. He's not even on the sideline for this week one game
against the Steelers. But let's talk about tomorrow's headlines today, because I think a lot of people are going to have some. And you predicted this along with the Demaryius Thomas production. You predicted.
Sick.
Never going to stop. You predicted that there'd be a lot of hot takes coming out of the Arizona-Detroit game in week one. And my goodness, I don't even think you knew how on point you were being, because this game went into overtime, ended up in a tie. The Cardinals and Kyler Murray looked awful for 3.5 quarters of play. And then I will say, as someone who is who has been, I don't want to say down on Kyler Murray, but just realistic about what a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback in a new situation could do, especially with the offensive line being as beat up as it was. Really, the resilience and focus that Kyler Murray showed in the last 7 minutes of regulation time was extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, Mark Schlereth was the color commentator for this game, and he said right before Kyler Murray really, which
got
ironically
it
got it going, he said to call the early debut of this offense garbage would have been an insult to garbage, which
yes.
Pretty harsh, Mark. But I think, it was terrible. I was looking at the NFL Next Gen Stats Twitter. They pointed out that in the first half, Kyler Murray, his completion percentage above expectation was below 16%. So he completed 16, which is horrible, by the way. But in the second half, 6.6% over expectation, and of course into overtime as well. And look, just watching the games, he looked so good, hyper accurate, like several sideline throws to Larry Fitzgerald. And I mean, this is what you wanted to see from this offense. He throws his first touchdown to David Johnson. So, I mean,
you know, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
you know, what it reminded me a little bit of was that Alabama game.
Yeah.
Where there
was
the tale of two Kylers, right? Like the first half, you're like, what is this? And the second half, you thought, oh my gosh, he's putting it together. So I think ultimately, though, this game is confirmation bias for the doubters and the truthers.
Mm-hmm. And if I can come down as a centrist,
I think that's about right.
I think that's where I came down kind of on this offense in general. And I'll do it one more time. And that I think seeing what we saw in the second half from Kyler Murray was super encouraging. Great stuff. Love it. What I'm more concerned about coming out of this game is actually Cliff Kingsbury, and not the offense or the design, but man, several really
love that you're talking about it. Go for it.
Cowardly decisions. I mean, especially at the end of the game to punt that ball back to the Lions, where there's no real hope of you getting the ball back with how much time was left. That's a clear play for the tie moment. And bro, like, what are you trusting your defense? You're Cliff Kingsbury, man. Like, give me a break. You're an offensive coach. Like, you should have faith in your quarterback, who is hot right now, to pick up that fourth down. And that was just one of several decisions. I mean, they stayed in that game. I guess you could say they were able to come back in that game because they kept settling for field goals. I thought that was discouraging.
So, but that also bodes well for anyone who leaned into, I said it, drink. Who leaned into Larry Fitzgerald's value in the draft process, in the fantasy draft process. I mean, he led this receiving core, not just in looks with 13 targets, but also in yards, 113 and a touch. But he looked great, right?
Yeah,
like running that
vintage
flat route at the end. My God, like nothing phases him. He is absolutely ageless. And Andy Behrens, our colleague who was on the last episode, his bold prediction was that Larry Fitzgerald could lead the league in receptions after this game. I think Andy might have been onto something.
Right. I mean, Christian Kirk ends up getting the 2-point conversion too on a very similar route, but it was
the bond between Murray and Kirk, I thought, was very interesting to see on the sidelines as well.
Yeah.
Like, we like to talk about rapport and chemistry, and those two clearly have something beyond reps on the field and practice time.
So I think maybe the take coming out of this is Cardinals offense, let's hold, let's see what happens. They got the Ravens next week, so it's not exactly they were playing the damn Dolphins, so who knows, but I mean, I thought the Ravens defense came out pretty well in this game too. I think we talked about this earlier, that we were both kind of, especially you made the point, like, you know, we don't know what this Ravens defense is going to look like early in the season, but Earl Thomas looked right back to like transcendent Earl Thomas form. So I think that's going to be a tough matchup for Kyler Murray in this offense next week. I think they're all kind of holds to me right now.
Also, Jimmy Smith, the Ravens, who the Cardinals have next week, cornerback, he had a knee injury. It isn't a, quote, season ender, but I don't imagine he'll be on the field for week two. But Marlon Humphrey, the other cornerback, did look quite good in this game against Miami. So something to keep an eye on moving forward as you're setting your lineups and letting it all marinate. Let's talk about injuries. Jacksonville lost their new quarterback, Nick Foles, to a collarbone injury. Yeah. But this Minshew boy, wow. I'm into it.
You are into it. I think I had you convinced as soon as we were watching the games. I'm like, Liz, you seen this Gardner Minshew guy? I show you a picture of him, and he's like, what did you say? He's like a 1980s.
He looked like a 1980s PI.
Yeah.
Like a young Tom Selleck with that dirty mustache.
Well, I mean, Brett just came into the podcast like a couple weeks ago with the mustache, and you were intrigued. So, I mean, this is like, you're into mustaches.
Okay. Now I'm flustered. Can we talk about not? Don't
right
peer
here.
At me with that mustache, Brett.
I felt like
all of these
Minshew...
mustaches in a room. I'm the only one without a mustache, thank God. In this
maybe
room.
By week 16, you never know.
I felt like Minshew looked like a person on Ballers down. who would be cast as like a
you
Baker Mayfield type.
Sure. I think, listen, like, I'm not expecting Gardner Minshew to have this crazy ascendance, if you will. We've seen backup quarterbacks throw the opposing defense who haven't prepared for this guy. Like, I can't imagine there's that much tape available on this guy. So let's manage our expectations, though. I do think coming out of this game, it is interesting to see John DeFilippo. One of my curiosities moving into the season was what such a pass happy play caller could do in a seemingly conservative offense. And you saw Chris Connolly get fed. You saw DJ Chark run big and have a bunch of long runs. Sure, D.D. Westbrook was sprinkled, but we knew that. I mean, there could be an actual passing game coming out of Jacksonville, which is pretty exciting and adding balance to this offense.
Yeah, it's tough to say because obviously game script negated or made it necessary that...
Necessitated.
Yeah, necessitated. Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
That Jacksonville kind of take to the air, abandon the run, whatever.
They did it, though.
They did it successfully. That's worth noting. So, I mean, it's almost going to go overshadowed from this game and from week one that, like, Patrick Mahomes just went out there on what we still expect to be a good defense, dropped 378 and three touchdowns like it was nothing, you know, without his top receiver out there.
Regression is not in his vocabulary.
Yeah, regression is not hitting with, by the way, a hurt Patrick Mahomes, too. He has, like, an ankle issue coming out of this game, but Andy Reid's not concerned. No one's concerned. I'm not concerned. Like, we're fine. But so it's worth noting that the game script made it necessary that they go to the air, but at the same time they did it, like you said. So
there's some execution credit that needs to be given.
Yeah, but I think the question,
I mean, they didn't win the game,
this,
obviously.
Yeah, I mean,
but come on,
not even close. But
Gardner Minshew completed 22 of 25,
88% of his passes.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good. And so, but the thing that makes me, you know, it has me a little questioning the situation coming out of this game was Nick Foles was tearing up the Chiefs before he went out. Then Minshew comes in and does well. Is this the Chiefs defense has not taken that step forward, or is this just the Jaguars passing offense has taken?
Well, there were new pieces that need to coalesce, right?
Right.
So evolution takes time. That's something we talk about a lot. I think, to borrow a phrase from you, both things can be true.
I think that is very possible here. I mean, this is DJ Chark. We don't talk about him much, but he is a big...
Is he fast? I heard he's fast.
He's fast.
He's the fastest guy at the combine 2 years ago?
Yes, I think that
wow.
is true. And I mean, Conley was that guy too. So they have on the outside two dynamic, big,
hyper-athletic
speed threats. And then D.D. Westbrook is a good speed slot receiver. So, yeah, I mean, this is a passing offense that I'm at least intrigued by.
Not for nothing. Leonard Fournette had six targets, too.
Yeah, which we really wanted to see.
I think
coming out of the preseason, I believe he was in on 18 of 19 of Nick Foles' first team snap. So it was clear, like, he's a three-down back. He's good to go. Game script got away from them, of course. But overall, this Jaguars offense, even with Minshew, looks more intriguing coming out of week one than
Minshew
I expected.
Minshew may be replacing Eli Manning in my power QB power rankings here.
Hey, I mean, is Eli Manning going to even be in the starting lineup
much
longer? Oh,
Danny Dimes did have some. Let's talk about one more injury, though, because Tyreek Hill, obviously, was driven off the field, carted off the field, by the way, seems like so much more dramatic. They're like a golf carted off the field, not like
they
thrown
wheel,
into a
like,
wheelbarrow
wheel,
and like taken off.
Carted his
like,
dead body off the field or whatever.
Very, very.
You're right. That is kind of.
I don't like when people say it because I like when someone says, like, hey, did you hear so and so was carted off the field? I imagine
sounds,
like the stretcher and the whole thing.
Like they put him in a coffin and then they had to transport him.
I mean, I wasn't saying anyone was dead. Just
it
for
just,
the record.
It's, like, it sounds much. You're right. Because I've thought about this recently. I just haven't put it into words. Like, yeah, it does sound more dramatic than it needs to be when it's basically just a golf cart came and picked your ass up. Like,
right. Like you could have had cramps. But right. Tyreek Hill has got much worse. He was hospitalized. He's got a sternum clavicle shoulder situation. It's almost like getting hit in the sternum might hurt. You can marinate on that one for a second. Anyway, he's going to miss a bunch of games. We aren't quite sure how many.
Yeah, multiple weeks.
So in his stead, and actually before he left the field, we saw Sammy Watkins, your favorite player, showing out. So are you buying this Sammy Watkins hype?
I mean, we talked about this earlier. It might be a little bit of take lock for me to say I'm not
almost
buying in.
200 yards and 3 touchdowns.
But like
against the Jags defense.
Right. And he did
saw him trip up Jalen Ramsey.
He did run a really good route in the red zone for one of those touchdowns against Jalen Ramsey. But it's not that anyone disagrees that, you know, Sammy Watkins is capable of having big games. We saw him have big games last year. He went over 100 yards and scored 2 touchdowns on Brett's Denver Broncos. Like, we've seen him do this before. Even with the LA Rams the year before, he'd go, you know, ghost forever, and then he'd come out with big games. We know he's a talented receiver. The thing with him is just stringing consistency. Like, there's no consistency with his route running. There's no consistency game to game. I still think, even as the top target, I wouldn't go out there and think like Sammy Watkins is a must start every
week.
Do you
know who he plays in week 2?
Let me know. I don't know off the top of my
head. The Raiders.
All right, well, in week 2. In week 2 you're going to want to start Sammy Watkins.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move along to, so we did the injuries, we talked about AB. Now, something that we both noticed while the games were going on was that, man, these rookie running backs don't look great.
No.
Or at least their usage doesn't look great, right? In previous years, rookie running backs you could always count on, right? And rookie receivers, on the other hand, showed out. And we haven't seen a class since the 2014 class that's really wowed in this way,
right? Yeah.
So rookie receivers, good, versus rookie RBs, bad. Let's talk about Devin Singletary, 4 attempts, 70 yards, plus 5 receptions for another 28 yards.
Tough matchup, right?
We expect Frank Gore, blarg.
Hey, Frank Gore leading a team in carries in the year 2019. Or I believe he was first on in the backfield. Josh Allen might have had more attempts than him because, of course. But
running back.
Among the running backs, most carries goes to Frank Gore, which just gorgeous. I mean, it's nice to see the pass game usage for Devin Singletary. Like, that was one question coming into this.
Because Cole Beasley couldn't catch anything and he was supposed to be reliable.
Like, what are Cole Beasley, bro? Like, yeah, you're supposed to be the reliable guy. You've got the speed.
I told you they needed to play some Big and Rich over the loudspeaker and get him in his groove.
That's the funny thing too, because it's just like one of those, you know, narrative things. Like, oh, Josh Allen, what's the point of even having one of these players? Because he's just going to miss him. He's not going to hit him. Like, there was that one outside ball that Cole Beasley dropped. That was a beautiful pass. Like, Josh Allen, to me, yeah, there's some shaky parts to his game, but it was clear which one of these two was more exciting in terms of the second-year quarterback. Sure. Sam Darnold, Josh Allen. Josh Allen was much more exciting. But back to the running back situation, like, Devin Singletary, seeing the pass game usage, 5 catches for 28 yards, that was important because TJ Yeldon, I don't think anyone thinks that TJ Yeldon's all that good, but he made this roster, and he's a guy who has a lot of passing game work on his resume. So it was nice to see Singletary have that role, because I think we only expect him to take more and more from Frank Gore as the years go on. So he's not a guy that I would panic on coming out of week 1.
So you're just tilted this week. You're not jilted,
correct.
This week. Got it. David Montgomery.
Yeah. I mean,
so David Montgomery, Chicago Bears, talking back about Thursday night game. I mean, there was a moment that I had a couple of beers watching the game. It was a fun time, right? Like, we've been
football's back, baby. Come on.
My team, my marriage team, not my side piece team that I'm watching. So I was all in, and there was a moment that I heard Collinsworth say, "Yeah, Mike Davis lined up in the slot." And I was like, "No, I didn't." Clearly, the IPAs are getting to me. is this true? Is this real life? And, you know, I think the silver lining here, or what I'm hopeful of, is that Matt Nagy will go back and look at the tape and say, my goodness, David Montgomery is so much more explosive, dynamic. He gets first downs that, frankly, Mike Davis can't get. Let's move things around. This didn't work. So hopefully he doesn't have a take lock and is willing to be flexible and allow Montgomery more opportunities. Davis is not going to be out of the picture. I think we can all agree on that. Probably he'll be there to vulture. He might take some early down work, but on third downs, give the ball to Montgomery.
Yeah, this is one of those, like, look in the mirror moments.
That joystick guy. I mean, what's his name? Tariq Cohen.
Oh, well, so
could
yeah.
Could be there on those third downs, too, so.
Let's take it all in full view. Like, Matt Nagy definitely needs to have, like, a look in the mirror moment coming out of this game. Because, I mean, he was running Cordarrelle Patterson up the middle. Like, give me a break. I am so pro Cordarrelle Patterson, like, gadget plays. I'm pro him being out there. But here's what I don't need you to do with Cordarrelle Patterson. Don't need you to run him up the middle on third down. And I don't need you to line him up and run out routes on third down. And you have be totally blanketed by Kevin King or whatever. Like, those aren't the things I need you to be doing with Cordarrelle
Patterson.
We need
Matt Nagy to self-edit.
Yeah. So that's one thing he needs to look at. I mean, Tariq Cohen was getting so much passing game usage that we actually had clowns adding the fantasy handle, like, time to make Tariq Cohen wide receiver eligible.
Which,
by the way, that's bad for you. You want him
Matt,
to be
we
a
don't
running
have enough
back.
Time to do
I,
this.
I have, oh, I've got time. I've got
you know
time.
What? Somebody tweeted that at me, and I said, I'm going to pretend I didn't see this. That's, and that is how I'm proceeding.
That's probably for the best. But the good thing about Matt Nagy is that we saw him last year be a guy who did vary his game plans up. So I think he's capable of...
And he did it in KC too.
Yeah, I think he's capable of having that look in the mirror moment and seeing Dave Montgomery better player. But I think you do have to at least adjust expectations, which I think honestly was foolish to begin with, that if you thought Mike Davis was going to be a total zero in the backfield, you can't expect that.
Sure. But you also... I mean, yes. We'll see if he adjusts. Miles Sanders, 11 attempts, 25 yards, one reception for another two through the air. I will say the silver lining here, I mean, it is not great when you're sharing a backfield pretty evenly with Darren Sproles, right? Like,
not what you want to see.
Also, Matt said as we were watching these games, RIP Jordan Howard, and I could not agree with that more. Let's pour one out for the homie. But if you are sharing a backfield with Darren Sproles, again, you have to imagine that, as we've said before, this is going to be an eventual catching up, right? Like, this is eventually going to become Miles Sanders' backfield. The best thing I did see, the optimistic thing that I want to be optimistic about is the fact that Miles Sanders did get some of the goal line exposure in this one, and that is meaningful.
He had a touchdown called back.
Right.
Too. I don't know if it was
that
a reception.
That was what I was referencing.
Right. I can't remember if it was a reception or a carry. But either way, touchdown called back, didn't happen, doesn't matter necessarily. But at the same time, yeah, I thought it was encouraging that he just outworked Jordan Howard, because Howard, I thought, would be the bigger impediment. You know, again, Sproles, he's still here. Him and Frank Gore, like, they should, they're ageless.
Like on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, right?
They are doing the same jobs. But still, like, I can be optimistic about Singletary and his receiving work. I can be optimistic about Montgomery and his skill set and Matt Nagy's ability to be flexible. I can be optimistic about Sanders and his usage near the goal line. Can we be optimistic about Daryl Henderson and his nada? Because Malcolm Brown, Matt and I have been saying this for months. Do not forget that the Rams decided to match an offer sheet to the Lions in order to keep Malcolm Brown. He was the number two ahead of John Kelly towards the end of last year, and he got hurt, which is what created this whole CJ Anderson debacle. Like, Sean McVay loves Malcolm Brown, and we saw that. He was on the field for 26% of the Rams snaps. That's not as many as Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley did get in there and work a little bit as a closer, but he still was vultured by Malcolm Brown twice.
Yeah, Malcolm Brown, like you said, team investment. He performed well in this game. And I think I said this in my Friday piece going into this week, that he was a guy you wanted to have on your roster for whatever the reveal was, right? Like, and we got it here, that he's the number two back. That Todd Gurley's not going away, of course. I mean, but something could happen that changes the situation, and then you want to have Malcolm Brown on your roster for that. And what do you do if you're Daryl Henderson drafter? Because, like, I think you're kind of banged, right? Because you don't want to cut him because you probably spent too much draft capital on him.
Which we shouldn't
have done. outside of, like, a dynasty league or maybe some best ball situations. But you overdrafted him. Now he's basically a guy that if you cut him now, you're really worried that the upside will reveal itself later. But there's no usability here. He's a pure stash. I mean, he is
not immediately. The problem is that, you know, Malcolm Brown has shown some durability issues, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
His legs aren't nearly as fresh. So I feel bad for the Henderson drafter because you're going to have to cut him to make room and to adjust if you want to keep winning. This is a head-to-head game that we play, right? And then eventually, Malcolm Brown will go down and you will need to reacquire him or he will be lost from you.
Yeah, there is no difference now at this point between Daryl Henderson and Darwin Thompson. And Thompson had his peak, you know, moment there before the LeSean McCoy signing, but Henderson was like a sixth, seventh, eighth round pick throughout draft season. Thompson kind of got towards the ninth round range.
Featured in your first Drumbeat article. He hasn't done a damn thing.
Not since then. I mean, this is why the Drumbeat's important, because he was like out there and people were like, hey, he's looking good in the preseason, bro. He's looking good in the preseason against.
So did John Kelly.
In third, fourth quarter goofballs. So, yeah, I mean, if you drafted Henderson, I think this is the one. He's the most alarming situation out of the four of them.
Well, let's get out of the negative and let's talk positive. The receivers. Let's start with another guy whose last name is Brown, Hollywood Brown.
Yes.
Matt. He didn't seem to have any foot issues to me.
Hey.
Still looked pretty quick.
Only played 12 snaps, but it's worth noting that
he smashed on those 12?
Yeah, he crushed it, made the most of limited opportunities. It's also worth noting, you could say 12 snaps, and that sounds a little alarming, but, like, remember the entire offense. I mean, we had RG3 out there in the fourth quarter. Like,
right.
The whole offense was pretty much pulled, and why would you want to risk a guy that spent so much time on the injury report this
offseason? But he didn't even get those reps, which I think is interesting that he didn't get that many reps and was still able to beat Minka Fitzpatrick. Like, this is something. I know that the Miami Dolphins aren't particularly good, but moving forward, Hollywood Brown has real value to me, especially because he makes Lamar Jackson look so gosh darn good.
I mean, nailed it there. So appropriate. Family-friendly show here, the Ivy Fantasy Football Podcast. I think that, like...
Never do it again.
I think the great thing... And, you know, something that I don't think I ever really vocalized, but thought about this a lot this offseason, like, people would say, Hollywood Brown and John Brown, like, we saw John Brown completely erode from the offense last year, you know, when Lamar Jackson took over. I actually don't think those two are similar skill set players. Like, they're both good route runners. They're both speed threats. But what the first catch that we saw Hollywood Brown have today is different than something we expect out of John Brown. You know, John Brown is that curl route runner, that comeback route runner, works the sidelines. Hollywood Brown goes over the middle of the field. He takes that slant for over 50 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's something that, hey, you don't need any practice time to do that. And
but also, like, they have been working with each other, even if,
right,
you know, it, yeah, isn't the same.
Totally. And I think it's just worth, yeah.
I mean, Lamar Jackson had a real offseason.
Exactly.
As a team starter.
That's why I was willing to give him, like, willing to almost kind of throw out what happened in his rookie year, because...
You certainly called it. I will give it to you. Something that neither of us saw coming, though, was the reign of Terry McLaurin.
I mean, it's worth it.
He was another one of these speedy receivers, you know, teammates with Dwayne Haskins. So I think we both kind of assumed that they would eventually develop as a duo once Haskins took the field and got enough reps. I never saw him as being a Case Keenum guy.
Right. Now, it is like, Terry McLaurin was making some noise in training camp at one point. The thing was just like, what are you going to do? You're not going to buy a Washington receiver.
But also not with Case Keenum under center.
Right. But, I mean, he was getting praised for his route running. He was getting praised for all that sort of stuff. So, you know, and this is a secondary that still has some question marks. I expected a much better defensive performance out of the Eagles in week one. But Case Keenum, every now and again, you know, he'll let his freak flag fly and, like, really go out there and dust a much better opponent. And he certainly did. Vernon Davis also got loose in this one.
Jordan Reed was out.
Jordan Reed was out, right. Also, narrative streak game for Jordan Reed because for Vernon Davis because his grandfather passed away the day before this game, and he went out and he was crying after his big touchdown catch. So, you know.
He's also a DC native. I mean, he left San Francisco to finish his career theoretically at home. Nice to see.
But Terry McLaurin, do you think there's any staying power here? I just really don't want to trust this offense.
That's the issue. I don't want to trust this offense. I think the biggest story out of this offense was the fact that AP was a healthy scratch. I'm guessing he wasn't happy. I mean, we do have a data sample from New Orleans about AP not being happy about being on the sidelines when a younger player is making some noise, except Darius Geis did go to the medical tent in this game. Now, I don't think it was anything serious, and he is going to play moving forward, but ultimately, just This is a big pass for me.
Yeah. 10 carries for 18 yards for Darius Geis on this one, too, which, like, if you don't like Washington's offense, this is what you expected. But I do want to just read Jay Gruden's quote about Adrian Peterson after the game.
This one stings.
Jay Gruden said about explaining Adrian Peterson's healthy scratch, if we have a game where we think we can run the ball 55 times in a game in an I formation, then sure, I'll get him up, which, like,
it's that second part. It's the and in an I formation. Like, yeah. If you expect us to do the most dull thing ever,
yeah,
then I guess we'll use it. Except also, Jay, it's not like your offense is wildly dynamic and creative.
I mean,
you buried him, but...
You completely buried him. I mean, I feel kind of bad for Jay Gruden a little bit because he's just...
Because he's John Gruden's brother?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel bad for that. And he's kind of set up to fail here, you know, with
Washington.
Oh, if
Dwayne Haskins doesn't work, it's it. This is it.
Yeah. And I kind of think Jay Gruden has been
misaligned.
Well, I think he's been better as an offensive coach than given credit for. I don't think he's a good...
Kirk Cousins certainly thinks so.
Right.
Look at his bank account.
Yeah. So, I mean, tough look for Adrian Peterson here, but what are you going to do?
Not a damn thing. Let's talk about another rookie receiver, A.J. Brown, another guy that I think you and I both had him ranked in our top three, maybe number two, right? I had him number two behind Hollywood Brown heading out this past April. Three receptions off of four targets for 100 yards. I don't think, well, you know what I was going to say? I don't think either one of us saw this coming, but we did both at one point say it wouldn't surprise us if A.J. Brown led the Titans receivers in receptions or production, but then he like was hurt and didn't have a lot of reps, and like who wants a piece of this damn offense outside of Derrick Henry? Like the whole thing just looked messy, especially with the O-line situation and Taylor Lewan being suspended for the first month. But I gotta say the Titans looked better than I anticipated, and Arthur Smith did a decent job doing what he could with what he had.
I mean, imagine drafting Corey Davis like in the mid rounds this year.
Oh, woof.
Three targets, no catches. And then to see A.J. Brown,
We all knew that, Marcus Mariota was going to need a security blanket, right? And that could be A.J. Brown, right? Like that big slot guy, really sure hands. I think we thought that it would be Deion Lewis, who's dropping damn balls. Or we thought maybe it's Adam Humphries, right? Like the Cole Beasley-esque slot guy. But it turns out that I guess it's Hollywood Brown, or at least from... Why are you smirking like that?
Because imagine drafting Adam Humphries and getting one catch for 5 yards either. Like this, A.J. Brown, I think, is a good player, right? I just don't know that I'm really willing to chase. Like you said, I don't know if I'm...
How much do you believe in the Cleveland Browns defense? I mean, I came in saying I thought that this was going to be a good defense, and...
I mean, the passing game, though, still wasn't good. Marcus Mariota, sure, he threw three touchdowns, but like... He wasn't moving the ball efficiently. Derrick Henry was, you know, moving the ball. Like one of Mariota's touchdowns was a 75-yard touchdown reception by Derrick Henry. I mean, I'm not going to like toot my own horn for two targets from Derrick Henry when Deion Lewis did catch three balls there. So that's still an impediment. But, you know, nevertheless, that was the big push for Marcus Mariota's big fantasy day, but I'm just really not trying to chase this passing offense.
I'm interested in A.J. Brown.
Okay.
He is available in like over 95% of Yahoo leagues. I
he can
love
be available
the kid's talent. I mean, I love the kid. I gotta say, like, I love the kid's talent, and I don't think that if and when Mariota gets pulled for Tannehill, it affects A.J. Brown at all.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I do really like the talent. Again, it's just the situation.
DK Metcalf is another. This is A.J. Brown's former teammate at Ole Miss. I was surprised at how well he did. 4 of 6 for 89. He looked good. I mean, the Bengals certainly have their problems.
Yeah, the Bengals stink.
But coming off of a knee scope, considered labeled raw, coming out of the draft, fell in the draft. This whole Seahawks offense was a little, I mean, outside of Chris Carson.
Yeah, Carson was a rock. Carson got 7 targets, like for all the people who were.
That was what they said did what they were going to do.
Yeah, 15 carries as well. I mean, but they took, I mean, Seattle just didn't run a ton of plays. I mean, 20 throws, like I said, 15 carries for Carson. I will say in the passing game, I know William Jackson, who is their best corner, had a great 2017 season, was tracking Tyler Lockett around the field, who, of course, made good on his one catch, 44 yards and a touchdown. But Metcalf, I was encouraged by how they used him just from the little limited glimpses I got of this game. Obviously, they use him on a deep sideline shot. That's good. You want to, he's great at contested passes. But one thing I really liked was on one of his catches, and it's against Dre Kirkpatrick, who's not good, but they got him a free release, gave him that quick slant to the middle of the field. That is the optimal way to make use of a guy like DK Metcalf. And I will say, I definitely got spooked off of him after the injury, which
the knee scope situation,
I think
yeah,
was worth being spooked by. But going into that, I think I remember we were about to do a podcast like the day before that happened or something. And I said, I'm like, I'm kind of warming to DK as like a 10th round pick. And then like he gets hurt and I'm out. But at the end of the day, I think there's so much opportunity in this pass.
Especially while
group.
David Moore is out.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think DK's in a perfect spot. I'm still really high on
him. So we can continue. We will continue to believe in his ascent or evolution moving forward.
Yeah, he certainly should be on rosters in almost all league formats, I think.
Do you know who really showed us who they were today and were true to their word?
Yes.
Men of honor. The Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
We had a legit identity confirmation. Mike Zimmer has been screaming at us. We want to run the ball.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if we have Stephon Diggs. I don't care if I have Adam Thielen.
I don't care if
I paid my quarterback all this damn money. You know what I want to do? I want to run Dalvin Cook into the damn ground. And he did, except Dalvin Cook didn't run into the ground. He ran vertically on light little feet.
Yeah, he ran right through the Atlanta Falcons defense. Now, let's give some asterisks
here.
Some perspective, yeah. The Falcons were a great matchup. I think the highest they finished in Football Outsiders run DVOA in the Dan Quinn era was 20th. They finished like 28th and 32nd in other seasons. And also, of course, we know that they have allowed the most receptions to running backs in each of the last four seasons as well. So this was a great matchup. And it was a great game script too. I mean, they're up 28 to nothing going into the fourth quarter. They're smacking the Falcons around. That's perfect for running the ball. But yeah, as you said, they have been screaming this at us since they fired John DeFilippo at the end of last season. They want to be a run first team. They bring in the Kubiak contingent. They spend a first round pick on a center. They spend a third round pick on a backup running back. This is who they want to be.
So I think that bringing up Alexander Mattison, their backup running back, is important here because a lot of people were scared about, you know, we talked about Malcolm Brown and Todd Gurley and the vulturing, right? People were scared, especially considering Dalvin Cook's durability issues in the past, as to what usage Alexander Mattison would have, right? Is this Latavius Murray 2.0? If we are looking at week one's data, the answer is no. Dalvin Cook touched the ball 23 damn times. Alexander Mattison had 9 carries and 0 targets in the receiving game. I'm not afraid of him.
No, I'm not afraid of him either, but he's certainly someone you want to have on rosters because...
Not now.
Oh.
No, Matt.
I mean,
No, it's not handcuff season. Not when I see my running back get 23 touches. I am not wasting a roster spot on Alexander Mattison.
You don't have to be the Dalvin Cook owner to have him, but look, if...
How many roster spots you have, friends? Some people only have like 4 bench spots.
All right. I'm just saying you want to have
guffawing at the notion of you adding
I think he's still shook about the Cordero Patterson slander, but nevertheless, I think... They even said they want him to be their Latavius Murray. Again, I'm not scared of him on a week-to-week basis, but these are the type of lottery tickets you want to have on your team. I mean, you still want to have Justice Hill on your team.
You have to prioritize.
Yeah, sure. Like, if you want to keep Danny Amendola on your bench over...
Nobody's keeping Danny Amendola. Like, the percentage owned is wildly different. Like, you can't say that. That's like keeping, you know, I don't know, Demaryius Thomas on your bench.
Well, I mean...
Just in case.
He might be...
Break glass.
He might be active in 11 personnel, so you never know.
Where are we? Man, now I got off track. So, we know Minnesota is who they want to be. They are who they told us they were. Cleveland, though, let's dig in a little more. I know
yes.
we talked about him in relation to the Tennessee game and my new favorite player, apparently A.J. Brown, who I would stash over Alexander Mattison. But I know they fell flat, man.
Yep.
What happened?
So I don't know if we really talked about this
while we were watching the games. There's a lot going
on. I don't think we've given enough credit this offseason to like we don't know who Freddie Kitchens is like as a head coach at all. We know who he is as an offensive play caller, all that sort of stuff, and like we like him as a personality, I think, but this team looked really undisciplined this week. I mean, and there's a lot of volatile personalities there. We do know that, but the Browns committed 18 penalties. They got a player ejected, and they got, I mean, they looked weak at home.
And that was the most penalties that the Cleveland Browns have had since 1951, bro.
Yeah, for all the bad Browns teams that have been out there, that's not good. No. And look, I think this Titans defense is a little underrated.
Sure.
They have, especially up front, and like I said, the player that was ejected was their left tackle, Greg Robinson, who's also not even good to begin with. They do have major problems on the offensive line, and this is a team that wants to get the ball down the field. So that's kind of, you know, not in concert there. But this is a team on Tennessee that has Jarrell Casey still. They spent the first round pick on a defensive tackle. And most importantly, they have Cameron Wake, who is like ageless.
Talking about the Titans.
Yeah.
Versus the offensive line that was supposed to be protecting Baker Mayfield, but allowed him to be sacked 5 times.
Right. And Mayfield also just made some bad. He just had a bad game.
They looked not in sync.
Yeah.
Right. Like I wonder if the hip issue for Odell is coming into play here, if there's a reps issue, if there's a rapport issue. But I think you're right that pointing out the lack of discipline is certainly important. And I'm interested to see, are you freaked out at all? Like, are you freaked out by Nick Chubb? Are you freaked out by OBJ? Are you willing to, like, give this team the benefit of the doubt out of the gate, especially when they're on Monday night next week at the Jets?
I mean, with Nick Chubb, like 17 for 75 on the ground and another 3 for 10 through the air, like quit your whining, you know, like that's a fine performance for your RB1. It's not Dalvin Cook coming out of the gate, but I don't know what there is to be freaked out about.
I guess the thing I am freaked out about is that Odell Beckham Jr. averaged 10 yards per reception.
Yeah,
but that's not his job.
But even then, like, 7 for 71 is fine from a bottom line perspective. He's still got 11 targets.
But the way we like to talk about process. The way he got those yards is concerning to me. Like, that's, sure, that is a Jarvis Landry line. That is not an Odell Beckham line.
Yeah.
Jarvis Landry, meanwhile, is averaging 16.8 per reception.
Like, something's not right here.
Yeah.
Rashard Higgins on his two catches, 23 yards per catch. So, yeah, I think that, hey, maybe you're right about the hip. Yeah, I mean, maybe you're right, but at the end of the day, I think this is a team that does need to take some time to come together. I am certainly willing to say more, this is just a bad game.
Sure. And I would love to see Freddie Kitchens versus Adam Gase next week on primetime.
Wow.
All right, I think that is gonna do it.
We have us. Yeah, I think we have covered it all. We've said it all. Josh Gordon's already scored a touchdown on Sunday Night Football. So, I mean,
you have the prime view. I can't. You're like, keep looking over my shoulder, and I'm not really allowed to turn back and watch the game because I have to talk into the mic and look at your mustache.
I mean, weakest mustache in the room, by the way. Not even close.
But we will be back on Friday, y'all. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. Also, if you got something to do, maybe check out a new show premiering on Monday called Cover 3 with myself.
Let's go.
And we will be on taking a look back on Sunday's games, looking forward to Monday's games. We have some field trips planned. It's a weekly show, so check it out. I'd appreciate it if you would. I'm at Liz Loza _FF. That's Matt Harmon _BYB. We've had a long day.
Long day.
We, too, are shaking off some rust. But we will be back and sharper than the Cleveland Browns this Friday. Yeah.